Hello.
Hi, Elizabeth.
No, it's Ann.
Oh, hi, Ann.
Hey. So who's this?
Steve Adams.
Hey, Steve. How are you? Oh, good.
Very good.
Let's do some business before the other people come on, because
Okay.
I have two problems. And the first problem is a delivery that we sent to you guys earlier this year that has been ingested. And the problem is this. It turns out,
The whole thing?
hey, Elizabeth.
Hi,
So the
folks. Hi, who all out there? Hi, Mitch. Who is already online?
Ann Rao?
Ann? Okay, we've also got Ron Joyner here, and we'll probably be joined by several other folks.
And I was talking to Steve until people started calling
Yeah.
in, so I guess I'll give up trying to talk to Steve. I'll talk to you later, Steve.
Yeah, do you want me to call you later today after the meeting?
I actually leave almost immediately after this telecon has ended, depending on how late it runs, because I only work until 2 p.m.
Okay, do you want me to talk to Carol?
No, it actually hasn't got anything to do with Carol.
Hi, folks.
We have a copyright issue with the delivery. I need to pull the delivery disc back and remove the unlicensed document is what I need to do.
Okay.
So that's basically it.
Do you want to touch bases tomorrow then?
Yeah, that's probably the easiest thing. How you want me to make deliveries in the next couple weeks?
Okay, I should be at my desk at by 8 o'clock Pacific time.
All righty.
If I don't hear from you, I'll give you a call
Okay,
tomorrow
great.
morning.
Steve Adams, are you staying online?
Yeah.
Okay. So far I've got Ann Rao, Susie Slavny, Lyle Huber, Steve Joy, Ron Joyner, Elizabeth Rye, Steve Hughes, Betty Sword, Steve Adams. Anyone else?
Mitch Gordon.
Mitch Gordon. Sorry, Mitch.
Also at GEO, we have Keith Bennett and Dan Skold.
Keith Bennett. Oh, man. I'm going to learn to spell that name one of these days.
Keith.
Ah.
Keith.
Okay. And I'm sorry. What was the second name? I know I've. I'm sorry, I've forgotten it already.
Dan
Yep.
Scholes, Scholes.
Yes. Okay. Got it. Good. Thank you. No. Oh, in the different. Got to reverse now. Yeah. Okay. We're going to wait a few minutes longer because I know there's lots of folks who want to be in on this telecon. Hi, Todd.
Morning. That's pretty good. Portions of this conversation may be recorded.
The basic reason I'm doing that, folks, and yes, I wanted to repeat that announcement when we've got everybody online. I want to be able to participate in this discussion rather than worrying about taking minutes. Hi, Chris. That's the main reason I've got the recording turned on. Hi, Dick.
Hi.
We do not have names. Yeah. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. What do we have? 9 nodes nowadays? Rings. We don't have rings. No, yes, we do have rings. Okay, we've got everybody but names, and they haven't been showing lately, so. Okay, Sue's the only person that I was aware of that was going to show that is not here. Okay, and she already knows what's going on, so I don't worry about it. Okay, why don't we go ahead and get started? And I never put in a link to that presentation. Okay, I have been told that based on the PowerPoint presentation that I produced for the May high-rise meeting plus Mike's talk 4 weeks ago, that all of you folks are fairly familiar with the basics of the JPEG 2000 format. Is there anyone for whom that's not true and you would like a brief review? All right.
I'm not sure how familiar I am, but if what you said Monday is kind of what you would say today, I guess that's good enough.
Okay. Then, based on that, what I'm going to suggest is that we jump straight into the SCR. And I know Dick and Susie, you've already brought up some concerns, and we will attempt to address those as we go through this. The first correction I want to make for everybody, just so that in the future we can refer back to the same SDR, on the version that I sent out to all of you, I forgot to change the date. So rather than saying September 13th, it should say September 27th. And that will be the formal date of this SDR that we'll refer to in the future. Hello, Raphael.
Hi, Elizabeth.
Get your name down. Okay, great. Okay, so now proceeding to go get into basics of the SCR. Just to re-summarize the problem we've got the high-rise team is basically looking, we've been told at times that they could be receiving more data than exists in the entire PDS archive to date. Individual data products for the high-rise RDRs can be larger than 5 gigabytes in size. So we not only have a problem in terms of the overall volume of the data set, we have a problem in terms of the individual products and the ability for users to display those products and use them interactively. The high-rise team has proposed JPEG 2000 as a solution to this problem. Because of the flexibility of the JPEG 2000 format, we not only get compression, but we also get the ability to subset the image through progressive decompression, and that solves the problem of dealing with the large individual data products. Now, what we are going to propose as a solution is a two-step solution here. There's actually two things that we need to agree upon. One is that we, as the PDF, permit the use of JPEG 2000 and specifically the J2C compression code stream. Hello, Patty. For the compression of data included in the PDF. The second proposal is that we are going to accept the use of the JPEG 2000 image format, referred to as JP2. Both of these are going to be contingent upon approval of related policies, obviously a compression policy and a policy on the use of external data formats. But it is, I need you to understand that there are two components to what we're proposing here.
I actually heard three. Can you run those down again?
Yes, the two are acceptance of the JPEG 2000 compression algorithm in the form of J2C raw code stream files, and the acceptance of the JPEG 2000 image format in the form of JP2 formatted files.
Acceptance for what?
For inclusion, for use of data, for compression of data that will be included in PDF files, in PDF archives.
I have a question. Are both of those, do they allow lossless, lossy? I'm not clear how those terms of JP2.
Folks, let's back up.
Let's not back up. We're only considering lossless, period.
Okay, and we say that later in the presentation.
I have a different question that maybe this would make this question immaterial, but go ahead. I don't want to interrupt.
Well, I guess part of the problem is I'm hearing new terminology that I've never heard before and isn't in the SPR.
I really believe we need to go through a PowerPoint presentation that I can give all of you a lot more detail on this, and then we'll all be talking on the same page. Let me get that posted for you.
Can I ask what I consider a fundamental question?
Go ahead.
In reading through the SPR, and unfortunately I got interrupted and couldn't read past the first couple pages, but what is the advantage of JPEG 2000 over currently approved encoding types like JPEG, GIF, PNG, run length, and ZIP?
Okay, hang on a second, and I will answer that question in a moment.
Okay.
That's the 928 presentation?
That's the 928 presentation. You got it.
Okay. I've got it
online
here.
No, you don't. You have an older version of it.
Can you also email that out?
Okay, let me do that. That might be the quickest way to do this. Okay, JPEG 2000 PPT presentation. I'll mail it in both forms. Presentation. Okay, attach. You've got no way of hooking me up, I'm afraid. See, we don't have the right connection for Mac. Okay, PDF and PowerPoint. Okay, presentation is on its way to you. In the meantime, I am adding a link to it on the JPEG 2000 webpage, 0928. Okay. if you refresh your JPEG 2000 page, under introductory material, there's a new link that says JPEG 2000 supplementary material. There's a PDF version of the presentation that I just mailed out that you can pull up directly there.
Okay, I got it.
The one dated May 23rd?
No. Refresh your page. This is one that's, let me stick in a final date on there. It should be 05/09/28.
Okay.
Okay, and there's one other, if you'll excuse me for just a moment, there's one other file I'm uploading. Oh, I already did. Good. Okay. JP2_file_format.jpg. Great. Okay. All right. Has everybody got the new PowerPoint presentation in front of them?
Yes.
Yes.
What's we looking at? What's the first page?
Okay, the first page should say JPEG 2000 is a PDF archive format supplementary material. And the date should be September 28, 2005. Okay, I'm going to go through this presentation fairly quickly, but I'm hoping that this will get us all on the same page in terms of the terminology, et cetera. And forgive me to the extent for which I'm going over old ground. Okay, first fundamental question that we all need to understand is what is JPEG 2000, and it is not simply a compression scheme. It is a compression scheme and an image format. And if you go to the next slide, I provide more detail here. When you take a raw image, a raw raster image, and compress it using the JPEG 2000 compression algorithm, you produce what's called a raw code stream in J2C format.
Okay, but I'm sorry to interrupt again, but I just read through the presentation, and it doesn't compare it to the other existing archive formats.
Todd, if you could wait a moment, I will explain that. I'd appreciate it if you could hold off your questions until the end of this quick presentation, okay?
Sure.
Okay, when you take that raw J2C code stream and encapsulate it in a binary JPEG 2000 header, what you then get is what's called a JP2 formatted file. And we need to understand that these are two different files. J2C is the raw code stream, JP2 is that code stream encapsulated in a binary format. Okay, now, Todd, the question you just asked is what makes JPEG 2000 different from other compression algorithms?
No, why is it a better choice?
Okay, here's the answer to your question.
Not really. Go ahead. You're saying that the J2C, the code streaming, answers that question, why it's better?
What page are you on, Todd?
I hope the same one you're on.
Okay, we're now on
page 4.
Yes, we're on slide 4.
And we respectfully submit that it really doesn't matter whether JPEG is better or not.
Yes, it does matter for reasons that I will explain as we go on. The difference between JPEG 2000 and compression algorithms that we've used in the past, yes, you are correct when you talk about it being comparable as a simple compression algorithm. If we consider nothing but its compression capabilities, then there's no reason to even be having this discussion.
Okay.
The difference is, when we are talking about the code stream, it is far more flexible in the way that the data is internally stored within that code stream than any other compression algorithm we've used in the past.
But how does that relate to an
Todd,
archive?
Todd, can you please allow me to talk?
Sure.
Okay.
Sorry.
Yes.
Todd, you need to compare this to other JPEG. You said JPEG TIFF, JPEG such and such.
Well, I guess I'm just kind of wondering, you know, we're saying that there are statements in this that say, you know, well, JPEG 2000 is somehow a superior format because it's self-contained and all that. I can get a JPEG image, not a JPEG 2000 image. I can decompress it. It must be self-contained.
Todd?
A GIF image
is
same
Mitch,
thing.
Can you give me a break here? I'm not as familiar with all this stuff, and I just assume hear the presentation and then do the questions. Could we do that?
Sure, sure. I'm sorry.
And Steve also has to be quiet.
Yeah. Just go, Elizabeth.
Okay. What that flexibility of the code stream permits is the selective decompression of only pieces of the code stream. One is not required to decompress the entire code stream into an output file. One can, for example, decompress only a low-resolution image from the data. One can decompress only a low-precision version of the image. One can decompress only a physical portion in terms of the, like a tile or a you know, the lower right-hand part or a specific geographic location within that file. One can also store, at the beginning of the code stream, what are called regions of interest. This means that the data preparer has identified a particular part of that image which they believe will be of the most interest to their users, so they have placed it in a part of that code stream where it will be the first part that's decompressed. So what this means is that in the case where you have individual data products that are over 5 gig in size, as we've been talking about for this data set, you then have the ability for low-end users or even, you know, regular users who are sitting on a distant internet connection can now download only portions of the file rather than having to download and decompress the entire 5 gigabyte file.
Elizabeth, what page are you on of your presentation?
Page 4.
Thanks.
That is what makes this format different from the stuff we've used in the past.
Keep going.
Okay. Now, the next question is, why in the world do we want to care about the JP2 format as opposed to simply the J2C code stream? The J2C code stream is self-contained, and it contains all of the information necessary to fully decompress it into an output image file. What it does not contain is the information necessary to take advantage of these additional capabilities that I've just outlined on the previous slide. For that, you need to use the JP2 header. So, if we go on to the next slide, what impact does this have on the use of JPEG 2000 and PDF archives? What we are basically proposing is that we allow data providers to provide their products in either the J2C or the JP2 format. Now, Susie, you brought up a question about why aren't we just going with the same image label that we've used in the past. I want to now discuss what precedents we do have in the PDF for compressed data and data in non-PDF formats.
Okay.
Now, when we're talking about compressed data, we've got two main categories. We have that category of products where the files contain individual objects, each of which have been compressed individually. The other category we have is where we have data files where the entire file is considered to be a single compressed entity. Going on to slide 8, the examples of the data files which contain distinct objects are the ones that Susie outlined in her email, basically Clementine, MGS mock images, Viking Orbiter images, and Voyager images. On slide 9, I provide a basic description of how these things have been labeled. There has been in every case so far, there's been an attached PDF label. I thought I took that one out.
Go ahead.
Okay, I'm sorry. On slide 9, yes, the labels that we've used in the past have all been attached. They've contained information in a single label which describes both the compressed and the decompressed files within the single implicit file object. In every case, there was decompression software provided in the archive which produced a decompressed image file with an attached PDF label which had been modified slightly from the original label to describe only the decompressed data. On slide 10, I provide an example of a compressed label for the PDF Viking dataset. And you'll see what I mean here. The record type at the top is variable length. If you look down to the image object, you see an encoding type of Huffman first difference. If you then compare that with slide 11, which is the Viking label for the decompressed product, you see that the record type has been updated, as have the other file characteristics lines. The image object has also been updated. It no longer includes the encoding type. That is the traditional way we've handled compressed data, compressed image data. Okay, now we're going on to the second case on slide 12, where we're talking about compressed data that has been considered as a single compressed entity. To date, every compressed product that has been done in that style has used zip compression. The data sets that I was made aware of yesterday that have used zip compression are the Mars Pathfinder Rover Engineering data, the Cassini radar LBDR data, the MIR mobility reports, and the Hubble Saturn ring plane crossing supplementary data files.
Hey, Elizabeth, can I ask a question at this point, or should I save it?
Go ahead, Susie.
I don't understand the difference between, is not an image a single compressed entity? I don't understand the distinction you're making.
Let's go back and look at the Viking label on slide 10. Is everybody there?
Yep.
Okay. If you look at the pointers to start records of major objects in file, you will see that there are five pointers listed: image histogram, encoding histogram, engineering table, line header table, and image. All of those pointers are pointers to individual objects within that file. They provide information about the internal structure of the compressed file. This has been true on all of the data sets that have used this method of labeling, with the exception of MOC, which only had one object.
Right.
Okay, so the key point I need to drive home here is we've provided structure information in the PDS label about the internal structure of the compressed file, and the objects have been compressed individually within that file.
Okay.
Okay, if we go back to the...
Elizabeth, in
yes.
that example, only the image is compressed.
That is actually not entirely correct.
That is correct, because I've produced those files.
Okay, but if you look at the label that's attached to those files, it contains all kinds of binary characters. It's not a simple ASCII file. And the fact is that whether or not they're compressed, you're still providing internal structure information about that file.
That's true, but only the image is the compressed part.
Okay, you know what? It's not even a relevant issue. The issue is you're providing structural information about the inside of the file.
Right,
that's the critical issue.
All right, let me see if I follow you. So if there's more than one object in the file that you want to compress, that means you could do it the old way, but if there is only an image object to compress, therefore you have to use the zip convention?
No, that is not the logic. The logic is whether or not you are going to provide, you know, whether or not the PDS label is going to presume to provide any internal structural information about the compressed file.
Okay.
Well, I think you ought to make a distinction. You can have a compressed file or you can have a file of compressed objects.
Okay, that's fair.
Or, well, just a file of multiple objects, basically.
Okay, but again, what I will state is all the examples we've had for image data sets that have been compressed and labeled this in this traditional way is we have provided information about that internal structure. Okay, going back to the zip case, if you want to go to slide 13, this is now the labeling method for the zip structure, which is where you provide two explicit file objects, one of which describes the compressed file and the other of which describes the uncompressed file. All we state about a compressed file is fundamentally its size and what the encoding type was. I mean, there's obviously a few more details there. But we do not provide any information about how it is stored or ordered. That information is basically left up to the software algorithms that are responsible for decompressing it. All of the information about the uncompressed file is now provided in a separate explicit file object. Okay. Moving on to slide 14, I just want to briefly touch on the fact that we have used non-PDS formats for data files in the past. The examples have been FITS, ISIS, and Vicker. In all of these cases, the headers have been in ASCII format. We have used a combination of attached and detached labels to describe these products. And essentially, the image, or the data that has been contained in those files has been in the same format as a traditional PDF file would be. Okay, moving on to slide 15. We now approach the JPEG 2000 and have to ask, what would a label look like for this product? For one moment, I would like to have you all go back to the JPEG 2000 page and refresh that. Under introductory material, the fourth link that I've provided says JP2 format file. If you could pull up that image, I'd appreciate it.
Oops. Where are we now?
Okay.
Yeah, this isn't working really well.
Okay, the reason this isn't working well is because I don't have permission yet to distribute this image, but I'm deciding to do it anyway. I did not want to put it in a PowerPoint presentation. I just want to throw it up here temporarily, and then I will take it away.
No, the problem is I can't follow your instructions.
Okay. Go back to the JPEG 2000.
I'm not even on the website yet. Hang on.
All right.
Elizabeth, while we're waiting for Dick, I want
just
something
waiting for Dick.
The JP2 and J2C formats, I don't quite understand. When you make something a JP2 format, is that like a wrapper around the J2C file?
Essentially, but with some complications, and that's what I want to show you next.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, where on the page is the, on the web page, am I supposed to be looking now?
Okay, under introductory material, there should be four links.
Yep.
The fourth one should say JP2 file format.
Got it.
Okay, if you could click on that, there should be an image that will explain the JP2 file format.
Okay, well, there, I've got the schematic.
Okay, you've got it.
Yeah, I don't. That's Mitch taking care of it. I'm not Dick.
Okay, is everybody else on the same page now? Okay, what you are seeing in this image is the essential structure of a JP2 file. Now, when it talks about a box, the box is basically the fundamental building unit of a JP2 file. Each box contains a header that is specified in the JPEG 2000 specification, and it basically labels that box as a certain kind of box, and it tells you what information it contains. For example, the very first two boxes are the JPEG 2000 signature box and the file type box. And these have hexadecimal codes that indicate to software programs what the contents of the file are. What immediately follows that is what's called a JP2 header box. And the reason it's referred to as a super box is because it contains other boxes. Now, the information that is contained in this header box is what we would traditionally think of as metadata in the sense of the information that describes the image. Information about the color, about the palette, about the size of the image, the resolution layers of the image, etc. So that is the JP2 header. Now, following the JP2 header box, you have, in no particular order, boxes that contain the compressed image code stream, boxes that contain intellectual property rights information, boxes that contain XML coded metadata, and this could now be anything that the data provider wants. This could contain georeferencing information about the image. It could contain a description of the data provider's dog. There's no limits on what can go in there. There are then UUID boxes, and these are basically boxes set up to contain reference URLs. Now, these boxes can go in any order. They may be intermingled with one another. So you could provide parts of the image code stream, then an XML box, then another image code stream box, then another XML box. Finally, you could finish the file off with a URL box. There is no implied relationship based on the ordering of these boxes, based on which boxes are adjacent to each other. So basically, everything after the JP2 header box is a free-for-all. This is fundamentally why we cannot use the traditional labeling approach. In order to provide the labeling approach that we've always used, we would have to have a pointer to the header and a pointer to the image. Unless we require data providers to reorganize those boxes, we can't use the traditional approach. And we've discussed the possibility of forcing them to reorder the boxes and fundamentally believe that all we were doing was introducing the possibility of corrupting the data. So, given that, we believe that the most accurate way to describe this file is to treat it as a single compressed entity and allow the decompression software to handle it. And that mandates going with the combined detached label as we've done for zip compression. So, if we can now go back to the PowerPoint presentation and look at slide 16, this is fundamentally the approach we're looking at. All of the identifying information that you normally find within the implicit file object would now be included at the top of the label under the PDS version ID. That would be followed by two explicit file objects, one for the compressed file and one for the uncompressed file. Okay, going on to slide 17. The other issues that are involved with JPEG 2000, the JPEG 2000 specification does permit both lossless and lossy compression. We are proposing that data providers would be limited to using only lossless compression. And slide 18 deals with the licensing issue. The JPEG specification consists of 11 different pieces. Part one of that describes the syntax for the code stream that may be used on a royalty and license fee-free basis. Part two of that specification provides extra capabilities that can be used. However, they may require royalties or licensing fees. We therefore propose that JPEG 2000 formatted data in the PDF be limited to the syntax and features defined in part one of the specification. Finally, slide 19. What impact would the acceptance of JPEG 2000 have on PDS tools? The reference decompression software, the algorithms to decompress JPEG 2000 is available in both C and Java. What would be required is that we include these decompression algorithms in the object access library so that NASAView could decompress these images. I want to make it clear at this point, although we are proposing to allow the JP2 format so that people external to the PDS may use externally created software to take advantage of all the additional capabilities that the JPEG 2000 format offers, we are not requiring the PDS to support all of those additional capabilities. All that we are requiring PDS software to do is completely decompress the entire file back out into a traditional image format.
So with the label that we're using as your slide 16, we don't have a pointer to the ROI if they put one in.
That's correct. That information would be contained in the JP2 header.
And if somebody went after this, presumably they would be able to extract it just using the JP 2000 software rather than the PDS software.
That's correct. And at that point, it would then be up to the imaging node or any other node to build into their online interfaces those capabilities.
So on this label, if you actually just decompressed it using the JPEG 2000 software, it would actually return a .img. file?
Okay,
just a straight binary image?
Now, the problem there is when you talk about JPEG 2000 software, we need to be clear about what we're talking about.
Well, I'm not clear on.
Okay, exactly. What would be included, this is drifting over into policy issues, and I want to be careful not to go there, but I would presume that what we would require would be JPEG 2000 decompression algorithms to be included in the archive. They would hopefully be accompanied by software code that would be capable of decompressing the entire image file and outputting it into a raw raster file with a PDF header. Or actually, given that we're using the combined detach, this label would already describe that raster file. Now, that would be a function of the software that would be included in the archive. I would not expect commercial off-the-shelf software to produce a PDF image. I believe, in fact, the code that Mike's been experimenting with produces a PPM file? Yeah. Does that answer your question, Lyle?
Sort of.
Can our computers handle images that are 5 gigabytes?
Fundamentally, no. But the issue that we are looking at here is there's a distinction between using this format for archive data and using this format on an operational basis. In the sense of archive data, preserving archive data, the only thing we really need to care about is can we get all of the data bits back out into an output file. That we can do.
And we have computers that will do it.
Yes. Mike's already done that, yes. In an operational sense, that's where we then leave the responsibility to commercial off-the-shelf software or folks like the imaging node through their online interfaces.
Elizabeth?
Yes.
I turned off my mute button so I can speak now.
Okay, go ahead.
I hope, if it's okay.
Sorry, Ty, go ahead.
You made a statement which I think touches on my concern, and you said something like, all we need to be concerned about in terms of archive data is whether or not we can extract from the archive, you know, with software, an image format data, or data in a raster format or something like that.
Okay.
Am I characterizing that statement correctly?
You're hearing correctly. What's your concern with it?
Just that it requires software to get something usable out of the archive.
Yes, and that's true for that will be true for any compressed data. I mean, that gets back into the policy issue. Are you going to allow compressed data?
Right, and I guess my question for the group is, are we comfortable with requiring software to access archive data?
I will argue that that's a policy issue up to the Management Council, Todd. We are proceeding on the assumption that compression is permitted, therefore software must be required.
Okay, and then my corollary question to that is, shouldn't we limit the number of these formats? And
I will again argue that that's a decision up to the Management Council.
Hear, hear.
You need to be a little bit careful. I think you can work within the standards as you understand them.
Okay.
Putting everything back on the Management Council may just blow up in your face.
Okay. Yeah, I mean,
I think then that sort of leads to my original question is, in terms of volume data and the advantage of the compression offered by JPEG 2000, why is it better than existing compression methods that are already in the archive?
And I don't think that's for us.
Is that a relevant issue here?
No, it's not.
Well, if you'll bear me a few seconds, I think the answer is that the JPEG 2000 advantage is mostly on the output end. It's for the distribution and the user.
Right.
It's not clear to me that there's any advantage on the input end, and it does add a lot of complexity.
But I don't think we're here to decide yes or no JPEG is good or bad. JPEG
2000. That's true, but if you give the Management Council something that's not easily swallowed, then they may just throw it back up.
But all we're talking about is how do we label it adequately?
That's really
well, important. There's also the question of how complex you want the archive format to be. And how reliable you think the means of getting data in and out are going to be, and who's going to accept responsibility for making sure it all works.
I want to make one statement at this point, which is I believe that this format is fundamentally no more complex than compressed data sets that we already have in the archive, and that includes the zip compressed archives. But it all takes some kind of a decompression algorithm to get useful data back out.
I think that's true for J2C. I'm not sure it's true for JP2.
JP doesn't add that much more complexity. It just adds more richness in the boxes that describe the data.
Yes, the boxes are very clearly defined. You can sit there and do a hexadecimal dump and go through and pick out the boxes, you know, manually. It does not add a huge amount of complexity.
Yeah, Elizabeth, that box diagram was very helpful. Could it be put into your standard?
I have been talking to Document Review about whether or not they believe I can get permission to do that. I cannot put it in right now. I will try to get permission to either do that or to create a modified version of it.
Okay.
But that image came straight out of the ISO specification.
Probably a modified version.
Yeah.
Dick, I'd like to go back to your point since you are representing Management Council in some sense here.
Can't hear you, Steve.
Pardon?
Are you saying Steve is hard to hear?
Okay, Dick, I'm going back to your point since you're representing the Management Council in some sense here. You say you're concerned that the algorithm is more complex. Has Elizabeth addressed that issue clearly for you, that the J2C algorithm is no more complex than any other algorithm we've ever used? It's just that
I'm okay on that. It's the other one that I'm worried about.
And that the other one is simply giving us more metadata to take advantage of what the algorithm can do for us.
No difference.
I understand, but it's still more complex.
Okay, actually, Dick, one thing I need to make clear is that when that diagram refers to contiguous code stream boxes, those are the boxes that actually contain the image data. What is contained in those boxes is exactly a completely defined J2C code stream.
Right, but those are interleaved with other boxes,
okay,
potentially.
And I'm telling you that the specification is very clear on the labeling and the headers of those J2C boxes, and the JP2 boxes. And as I stated earlier, it is trivially easy to sit down, do an octal dump or hexadecimal dump of that file, and pick out those boxes yourself. This is not something that adds a huge amount of complexity.
Okay. Well, I haven't seen the diagram before today, so this is brand new.
Okay, would you folks like to now go through the proposed new section for the standards, or have you already done that? I know Dick had some detailed comments.
I had just a couple of small things if you're ready for them.
Go ahead.
Under the impact assessment section of the SCR?
Yes.
Not list NASAView?
I was told that updating Object Access Library would take care of NASAView, that NASAView basically relies upon OAL to do its work.
But doesn't somebody have to... Oh, okay, so once that's updated, NASAView will automatically work?
That's my understanding. Steve can address that question better than I.
Okay. I'll address you.
Under impact assessment, I've said that the Object Access Library will need to be modified to include the algorithms. Does that take care of NASAView, or do we need to list NASAView separately?
That takes care of the majority of NASAView. There's the other issue we mentioned yesterday, is that now NASAView is going to have to look at the uncompressed files.
But it would have to do that for zip compressed files anyway.
Yeah, exactly. So
yeah,
it's a slight,
yeah,
slight addition that we have to do.
Okay.
With that said, yeah.
So there's a minor modification.
Oh, I'll accept that. That's fine. And then my previous comment that it would be nice to have the box diagram in the text for the standards reference, and also...
Okay.
The ISO/IEC reference, I assume that's going to be put in somewhere.
Did I not put it in?
I see it in your SCR, but I don't see it in the text.
You know what I did is I put it in under PS implementation rules.
Okay.
Second paragraph.
Well,
it's
not very, I wouldn't know where to go look this thing up.
Okay. Now, I am very leery of giving the full URL because it's a four-line URL containing all kinds of search parameters.
Was there a text way of saying it? Like,
what I can do is I can say, go to the ISO website, enter this in the search box, and you'll get the spec.
Doesn't it have a title?
Yeah, it's got a title.
Yes, it's got a title.
Okay. Well, something that would help me find where to look it up.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Give full reference and specification.
Let's see. Here's a real tiny one. In your data dictionary definition for encoding type version ID, I'm wondering if 32 characters is long enough.
It's 32?
Yeah.
I had it as 20 originally, and Betty already bumped it up to 32.
Well, I just say that because I'm constantly running into that kind of limitation. If there's no reason why it has to be short, let's just make it like 60 or something.
All right. No objection here. The one reason I would want to keep it a little shorter is because it is an ID, but
okay,
I'm not going to argue that one.
You know. And then here's one more, and before I say what it is, I will say if everybody jumps up and hollers and objects, I will withdraw this and for another SCR. But Ed and I believe that it is not necessary to restrict this to lossless compression for RDRs because we believe that lossy compression is just another form of data reduction, and it is up to the data provider to choose to do that. And if his peer reviewers say that's fine, then it's not our place to say you can't do that. We do accept other kinds of reduced data that are irreversible, so I don't see why there's an exception.
I guess, Susie, what I would say on that is when you're talking about that kind of a reduced data product, you're actually talking about a higher level data set, something that is, as you say, a reduced data product. What I would argue is let's keep this simple for now and talk about this JPEG 2000 specification as it is. If in the future somebody wants to use it to provide specifically reduced order products, then I think we can introduce that as a modification. And then we would need to use language that makes it clear that for EDRs, you are not permitted to use lossless or lossy compression.
Absolutely. I just thought I'd throw it out in case there was an off chance of unanimous agreement, and then
okay,
maybe we could just make it easy.
I doubt you're going to get that. I for one, would not be comfortable unless we had a long discussion on that.
All right. No.
Would you be comfortable with discussing that as a potential future SCR separate from this one?
Okay.
Lossy versus lossless, isn't that, once again, a Management Council policy decision?
Okay, fine. We'll leave it for future discussion.
Okay.
What happens to the EDRs, by the way?
They are not being compressed, is what I understand.
That's correct. MRO,
I believe they also think nobody's going to use them. Is that fairly true? Essentially, the product that people are going to be using is the RDR. Yes. And that's why they're most concerned about making sure that it's operationally useful.
But are the EDRs going to be in the archive?
Yep.
That sounds as though they're much smaller.
They are.
So why are we archiving more than that?
Imaging products have traditionally been archived in many levels. A raw product is not necessarily useful to most of the community because they don't know what geometric and radiometric updates need
sure,
to be done to that file.
You just provide some software to generate a JPEG 2000 from.
And some missions have chosen to do that. Other missions have chosen to do the work of preparing the files for the user community.
This is going to open a door for...
Todd, this is...
This door has been wide open for a long time.
And that's frankly...
So let's close it.
No, RDRs should be delivered if they are produced by the data providers.
You know,
Todd, it's more requiring software to get something useful.
Todd, this is a question that I believe should be answered by Imaging Node's user community. I mean, they're the ones who are going to be using the products and to whom it's going to be most useful. So I think Imaging Node has got an advisory committee. Let's let them make that decision.
Yeah.
And the users are demanding higher-level products. They don't want EDRs.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. I guess you missed my point, but that's okay. Go ahead.
I heard the point. It was about providing software rather than the product. And as I said, some missions have chosen to do that. Other missions have chosen to produce the product.
But to use JPEG 2000, you have to provide software, too. It's all equivalent. You just change the names.
Nope, not equivalent.
EDR or JPEG 2000, it's all the same.
We're off the track. JPEG 2000 is the topic, right?
Yeah. And Todd, again, I will repeat that that's a decision to be made by Imaging Nodes Advisory Committee. Yeah.
We've made that decision.
Yep.
Yeah, I think that's what this is all about.
I disagree.
No.
I'd like to get back.
No, I think we're reviewing something that has already been decided. So, you know.
The point is, HiRISE is using this, whether we like it or not.
HiRISE will not deliver products to the archive in JPEG 2000 stand format unless we, as the PDF, approve it.
But HiRISE is intending to use it for their own internal distribution, yes?
That is correct.
Yep.
They're going to be using it, Todd.
Well, no, I
think... Whether we can live with using it.
But they have said that they would deliver something that wasn't JPEG 2000 if we didn't approve it.
That is correct.
Okay.
And they reiterated that again this last week.
Okay. So, I just... Back to the same question, what's the advantage of JPEG 2000 in the archive? Other than the fact that they're already generating it.
We've answered that, I think, Todd.
Well, you have provided answers. I'm not sure I'm satisfied.
I don't think advantage or disadvantage is an issue here.
Well, use it. Well, I'm done. I'm done talking. So go ahead. I'm listening.
Okay, how would you folks like to proceed? Do you want to wait to think some more about this?
Let's have a vote.
I think we need to move to a vote, but there's still a couple issues, I think.
Okay, go ahead, Lyle.
Your encoding type version ID, you know what? That's not an ID. Let's call it encoding type version.
If you call it a version, then your implicit class word is value, which is numeric. You need to either go to version name or version text or something like that. Version name would probably be...
You know what? The class name ID does not allow special characters like slashes and colons.
That is incorrect. ODL identifiers do not allow special characters. Keywords that end in the class word ID are not necessarily ODL identifiers.
They were supposed to be.
They are not.
That was an SCR that went through several years ago.
And there are examples in the ODL chapter that use ID class words that have that have characters that aren't allowed in ODL identifiers.
That's true. And there are ID keywords that cannot possibly be conformal ODL identifiers, like data set ID,
as we all know.
Notwithstanding that SCR was passed some years ago, noting the current exceptions and recommending that no further ones be made.
Okay, if you can send me that SCR, I would appreciate it.
If Engineering Node doesn't have copies of old SCRs that were saved, I am not about to make up your library.
And I've been doing this a long time, and I don't remember that SCR.
I bet you don't.
Wait a minute, does anybody else remember that SCR?
I don't remember an SCR, but I remember a discussion on that subject, and I remember that the exceptions were allowed, kind of where it was.
This was the underscore, all an upshot of the underscore versus blanks problem.
Okay, and what is your proposed solution?
To what?
to the encoding type version ID keyword? What would you like to see it say?
I honestly don't care what you call it. I'm just mentioning that you did have a CR, SCR, some years ago that did, in fact, restrict the use of the class.
Let's keep our attention focused on this SCR, right? If you guys are unhappy with encoding type version ID, what is your proposed change?
My proposed change is encoding type version.
Okay, and as I told you, that implies the implicit value class word, which only takes numeric values.
Where does it say that? I don't see that anywhere in the data dictionary.
Okay, I'll pull that up for you.
I do see where it says in the data dictionary that ID is a shorthand alphanumeric identifier.
Yes, but it doesn't say that it's an ODL identifier. What else are you going to call an ID?
Well, I know what alphanumeric means.
Okay, hang on a second.
Well, can you state what your objection is one more time?
My objection is that it's not an ID.
No,
we'll call it a name, but it is not a value.
You said something about you couldn't put some characters in an ID. That's where I lost track.
It's special characters like slashes and colons. Don't belong in IDs. Yes, they are in dataset ID, but that's a pathological case. IDs should be basically numbers, letters, and underscores. There is no class word version that I can see, so
there
I don't.
There is no class word.
That limits it to anything.
Okay, listen.
Character.
From the PSDD. As you said, version is not a class word. Therefore, the default class word for data element names not terminated with a class word is value. It represents the amount or quantity of a data element. For example, surface temperature equals 98.6 would be interpreted as surface temperature value equals 98.6. It is an amount or a quantity if it doesn't have another explicit class word.
So how about encoding type version text?
Well, what's wrong with ID but just get rid of the bad characters?
Well, you never know what characters somebody might want to put in there.
Okay.
Well, I know. In my email, I suggested that we needed some rules on constructing these things.
I will also point out that every other version ID in the data dictionary already contains what you're calling bad characters.
So we've done a bad job.
Say that. But.
Okay, fine. Let's call it a version name. I believe that would be the next most appropriate class word.
All right.
Done.
So there.
And do we have any way of enforcing some consistency in the use of this thing?
I don't see that there's any point in doing so. I mean, we're going to be talking about, for example, in this case, a pointer to a specific version of a specification. Let's allow people to be as detailed as they need to be to accurately describe that particular specification, standard,
right,
version, whatever.
But two people producing two different data sets may come up with a different value here.
Well, I took the value straight off the specification.
Someone else may not. I guess that's the point. It's almost like it should be an enumerated list in some explained sort of way.
Yeah, standard values.
Standard values.
That doesn't make a lot of sense to me. That means that every time ZIP gets upgraded, you're going to require a discussion to to introduce a new standard value to, you know, bump up the version number by 0.1.
Well, any change in version would imply some impact on the system, wouldn't it?
Enumerated values is on a totally different patch. The issue is the type of the value. And right now, it's character, nameless character.
Text.
Yeah, whether it's enumerated is another issue. Standard value type.
Standard value type is text.
I don't think you said that. You said the general data type is character.
I said general data type is character and standard value type is text. Standard value type is, that is exactly what I wanted. Yes. Yeah. I did want the accept anything, but they're arguing against that. You know, I really don't see that it makes any sense to be enforcing a certain format when the sources that are going to be providing that information. Hello, is everyone there still?
Yep.
Okay. When the sources that are going to be providing that information are going to be all over the map.
Right.
I guess what I'm trying to say is you are asking us to enforce on external organizations a format for the way in which they provide version information to us.
No.
I mean, we can't force ISO to tell us what a version should look like.
Well, that's not what I heard.
No, what we're asking is whether you expect this to be machine readable.
No, I don't, frankly.
Okay. I think that's underselling its value.
Yeah.
Well, it's a name now, right?
Well, the version I do probably would be machine readable. ISO is going to produce something that's machine readable.
Well, if it's going to be machine readable, then we ought to enforce some sort of format.
Are you suggesting a formation rule? I'm confused.
Yeah.
Well, how can we enforce a formation rule on something that's outside the PDFs? ISO is a center's body which could care less about PDFs.
I think, isn't that what Lyle's comment was about using underscore ID? Is it we can't enforce PDS rules on this? I mean, that's what I heard.
I think Lyle's comment has to do with whether or not it's an ID or a name.
Right.
Basically,
if it's an ID, then there's some constraints on the character set.
Okay, and I guess our response is we can't enforce those constraints on external organizations.
Right, so we don't call it ID and PDS. We call
okay.
it else. I think I thought that was Lyle's point.
And what I'm saying is that if we move to a name, there are still people out there, I believe, that are still objecting to the fact that we don't have constraints on this.
Could we have an open-ended, either dynamic or suggested list of standard values?
Can I offer a suggestion which...
Why does it need standard values? I don't understand.
Okay, I think, Lyle, actually you're being misrepresented because you don't actually require standard values. Susie's solution is one possibility.
Values.
I think Susie had a good suggestion. If we turn this into suggested, then we can provide a list of the things that have been, that are basically in the format we would like to see, but we're not enforcing any format. That would give some guidance to people providing information in the future. Would that be adequate?
And for the reason is that if I were going to make a label like this, I wouldn't have a clue what to put there, and I'd like to look it up.
Can I offer a suggestion?
Go ahead.
As part of this SCR, aren't we approving a certain version of JPEG 2000?
No. I would argue that we are approving JPEG 2000.
Of some specific version, right?
I would disagree.
2000 is the version, isn't it?
No, unfortunately, 2004 is the version.
Right. Because if you look at your version ID, it's very specific.
I think what we are doing is allowing the class of compression algorithms called JPEG 2000.
So every time JPEG 2000 releases a new version, there's an impact on the system, right?
That is the entire reason for providing this encoding type version ID. What it means is that somebody knows they need to go and get the latest, greatest version of the software to read it.
Well, remember.
Okay, well, I'll just jump to my suggestion is that in the SCR we say when you use the encoding type, the encoding type versions that are allowed are the following, and you specify what they should put in that.
I don't think we should. I really don't.
No, I don't think so. I think it would be sufficient just to have a dynamic list of standard values.
I frankly think Susie's got the right approach.
Exactly. You're putting a list to be in support.
But those list of standard values depend on your encoding type, right?
Right.
Yes. They're
keyed together.
Right.
Because you can't put, GIF-87 for a GIF format.
That's right.
The JPEG.
But that would prove, well, I don't know.
But we've got plenty of keywords that have implied relationships like that that we don't provide any software mechanism for checking. I don't see that that's a showstopper here.
Okay, I hereby propose...
I like your... go ahead.
What you were going to say. I hereby propose that encoding type version name have standard value type equals dynamic.
Not dynamic, you mean suggested.
Okay, suggested.
Yes. Dynamic would require PDS approval first.
That's right.
Okay. All right, are we ready for a vote, or does anybody else have any more questions?
What are we voting on?
We're voting on the acceptance... of this, okay, we are voting to recommend this SCR to Management Council. And what that...
The two working group telecons we had led me to believe this was a briefing.
Well, Susie asked for a vote, so why don't we just take a vote?
Okay, we can take a vote, but I don't think this is anywhere near ready for a vote.
Okay, who shares Dick's opinion?
I think it's an iteration away at least.
Have we at least covered the topics that Dick raised in his email?
Sure, we can do that. Where are we at? Okay. Does everyone have a copy of Dick's email, or should I read points as I go through this?
I'll have it.
Okay. current urgency, paragraph one, last line, JPEG 2000 directly affects. Yes, okay, I already caught that one, Dick. Thank you. I should have had JPEG. It currently says JPEG 200. It should be JPEG 2000.
You also have the wrong verb.
Thank you. Okay, proposed solution. Neither solution restricts use of JPEG 2000 image data.
Ed Ganes pointed me towards something a month or two ago that showed there are lots of loopholes for image data vis-a-vis compression. This pretty much opens it up if you can figure out how to get another data type into JPEG 2000.
Well, in fact, you did that, Mike, in one of your experiments, didn't you?
Well, kind of did, yeah.
Yeah.
You're right.
Do we want to restrict this format to the use of image data? Number one, is there any good reason to restrict it to image data?
No.
I guess the problem is that we've already got another barn door wide open. We're getting time series data from VIMS on Cassini in cube format, which is ludicrous. I mean, the first step is you have to tear it apart and put it in the right sequence. And Dick's comment is there's no way that I can see that we're going to be able to keep them from doing stuff like that unless we have a PDS policy that says the data format has to be reasonable and intuitive.
You don't want to get a zip file of a JPEG compressed cube object?
I don't know how the restriction would help us. There are so many ways that it could be misused. I don't see how you can say, don't be stupid.
Okay, then let's basically state in the I.3 part of this document, I will have somewhere in the first five paragraphs the statement that the use of JPEG 2000 is restricted to image data.
You use the word image everywhere throughout this document.
Yeah, but we don't explicitly restrict it. Yeah, the use of the JPEG 2000 compression format or algorithm? What do you guys want me to say? Format?
There are two different things. Say whichever one you mean.
Compression algorithm and format is restricted to image data.
Under the implementation
rules? That's actually an excellent place for it. Thank you, Ron. Yes, that will go under the implementation rules. Okay. Next issue on Dick's list. I assume we acknowledge that PDS policies on compression and use of external data formats are unclear and that clarifying these should be considered liens that accompany the SDR. That is correct. And I have no objection to that. That's why I put in this that we would accept these being consistent with PDS policies. And we're going to have to wait Management Council direction on those. Okay, additional information, paragraph one. Okay, there's a little bit. Dick, what you're basically stating here is that your understanding from the telecon we had on Monday was that part one is the only part of the specification that we will accept data. Basically, the data must be consistent with what's described in part one.
That's what you told us in your presentation.
Right, exactly. Now, the issue that I want to bring up here is when we're talking about the syntax, that is absolutely true. However, there are parts of that specification that may still be relevant. For example, I believe it's part four that talks about software and whether or not that software conforms. It's compliancy issues. There's another part that talks that actually provides the reference software, which is part five. So we can't simply exclude all of the other parts because they are relevant to the use of this format. I think perhaps what I need to do is to use the wording that was in my PowerPoint presentation and put it into the section I, and that's where I made it clear that the data needs to comply with the syntax. Where's my presentation? Which slide was it?
You do address it in the implementation rules section.
Well, but it's kind of vague there, too.
Yeah, the big concern is that that's not sufficiently stringent.
Yeah.
And again, I think I had better wording in my PowerPoint presentation if I can find it.
Yeah, I agree.
Not on page 18.
We propose that the JPEG 2000, okay, we propose that JPEG 2000 formatted data in the PDF be limited to the syntax and features defined in part one of the specification. Does that cover it?
Right, except then they got proposed.
Okay, so
yes,
in either case. Okay, so the second paragraph under PDF implementation rules would be in either case only lossless compression may be used. Furthermore, the syntax and features of the compressed code stream.
Why don't you make that a new paragraph?
Okay. The syntax and features of the compressed code stream must conform to Part 1, the core coding system of the ISO IEC specification defining JPEG 2000. Okay, is that adequate, Dick?
That's okay for the core coding, but do we want to put any limits on the JP2? Or is
oh, good point. No, JP2 is in Part 1.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, I see what you're saying. I'm sorry. You are correct, Dick. You are correct. Furthermore, the syntax and features of the compressed code stream must conform to Part 1, the core coding system of the ISO IEC specification.
Doesn't say anything about J2C or JP2.
Yeah, and I guess I'm trying to figure out how to do that, given that JP2 is completely self-contained in Part 1. You can't...
Well, if it's all in Part 1, maybe it doesn't matter.
Yeah, if it's not in Part 1, it's not JP2.
I'm just worried about people reading Part 8 and dropping something on us we'd never even thought about before.
I'd be more worried about Part 2 than Part 8.
Okay. Well, we heard about floating point something or other yesterday.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Which I guess is Part 11, which looked to me like maybe it was the wireless section or something.
I think basically the assumption that we're taking is if anybody seriously intends to use any other part of the specification, then they need to take that through a whole new SDR and propose a modification to our existing standard. Right now, we're taking the simple approach, which is just Part 1.
Okay.
Okay, do you feel, Dick, that we need additional wording regarding the JP2 format?
If what you say is right, that's probably good enough.
Okay. Going on to JPEG 2000 Part Paragraph 4, now let me see, I think we're back on the previous page here. Okay, this needs to be revised so that people unfamiliar with the JP2 structure can understand it on first reading. If I can get a diagram, at least a modified version of that diagram that we have into this document, will that basically answer your concern here, Dick?
I think so.
Okay, so response is add diagram.
I suspect you can draw your own.
Yeah, and I just need to find out how different it has to be, in order to get away with it. Okay, next paragraph, 5. This paragraph needs more context as written. It doesn't make sense. Okay, Dick, I'm having a hard time understanding where you're coming from on this one, and this is probably just because I've immersed myself in this topic for a while, but it does make sense to me. So can you please explain what the issue is here?
I'm not sure I can over the phone. The second sentence about PDS only being obligated to include archive algorithms and source code, first of all, doesn't follow from the first sentence.
Okay, I believe it's directly related, and here's my reasoning. What I'm basically trying to say here is that we've talked about all these additional capabilities that JPEG 2000 has. We want to make it possible for users of the data to take advantage of all of those additional capabilities. We do not want to require the PDS in its archives to provide software to take advantage of all those additional capabilities.
I know, I understand that, but it just doesn't come out of the paragraph that way.
Yeah, and I'm not sure I understand that. I want to ask you to back up for a second.
Sure, go ahead.
If 5 years down the road, JPEG 2000 comes out with a new version that is not backward compatible, if we haven't archived the software to do the full extraction stuff, then that capability is lost.
Okay, I need to stop you right there. I am requiring, or it is my assumption that we will require in our compression policy, that we do include the software to do a full extraction. That is exactly what my second sentence is about. We will retain the capability for a full extraction. We are not required to retain the capability to take advantage of all the additional capabilities.
Yeah, I'm wondering why not. Why are we not? If there, when we get a high rise in, how big a deal is it for them to put in the JPEG 2000 software in the software directory?
My understanding is they fully intend to do so.
Yeah.
But the issue here is on what we're requiring.
I think we should require that. That's my point. I don't see why we wouldn't require that. That way you have a compatible software to do this, take advantage of it. What I thought you were trying to say here is that we're not going to require the PDFs to have NASA view
well,
to be able to do that full extraction.
The response I would have is that we've never required ISIS software to be included whenever we have a cube archive.
That's true.
We don't require Vickr to be included when we have an image archive.
And I'm not sure that wasn't a mistake.
I don't think it's the PDS's job to provide a complete suite of processing software and interactive software for every data format it's archiving. Our job is to preserve the bits so that somebody else can build those tools down the road.
Oh, I disagree.
And besides, in this case, you're not preserving the bits. You're preserving some compressed version of the bits.
Okay, listen, I'm going to back up right now and say all of this is policy. Dick, how can I clarify this paragraph to make it clear what I'm stating?
Yeah, Elizabeth, I still think there might be some confusion or not understanding what you're saying. And I maybe we should make it clear that you are saying that you agree that we should preserve the ability to decompress the full image, but you're saying that we don't need to preserve some of the quote-unquote fancier or more distinct access to those image data.
You've got it exactly.
So the connection between the first and second sentence is a portion of an image in the first sentence and a entire data file in the second sentence. Is that right?
That is correct. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Is there any chance that this fancy decompression, partial decompression, and all these other things that you're talking about not supporting or, you know, implicitly mentioning, are these perhaps not in Part 1 of the standard?
They are all in Part 1 of the standard.
They're all in Part 1 of the standard. Okay, so it really is an issue.
And if there's any capabilities that people want to use that are described in other parts of the standard, they may not with this SDR. Okay, I've still heard a request, an open request for clarification on this paragraph. Given that I believe you understand what I'm intending to say, how can I clarify it?
I have an idea.
Go ahead, Susie.
I suggest a replacement for your second sentence, the one that begins, however.
Okay.
And instead, I suggest we say something like this, and I'll say it slowly. PDS software will have the capability to fully decompress the entire data file, but it will not necessarily have the capability to decompress portions of an image.
Instead of but, can you say may additionally?
I think Susie's got it better, in the sense of nobody ever objects to extra capabilities. What they object to is being required to provide them. Okay, Susie, I'm going to read this back to you. You tell me if I got it right. PDS software will have the capability to fully decompress the entire data file, but will not necessarily have the capability to decompress portions of the image.
That's what I said.
Okay, Dick, does that sound better? Is that clearer?
It's a little clearer. I just can't do this in real time, but you're only addressing the tiling question. There's also the high versus low resolution option.
Okay, then rather than saying to decompress portions of the image, can we say...
Well, you're talking about extra features in the software.
Well, but all of them involve partial decompression.
Right.
So I think we can say to decompress portions of the code stream.
Yeah.
And that would include all of those extra capabilities.
Or subsets of the code stream, such as tiling or low resolution.
Okay, subsets of the code stream, such as individual resolution layers or tiles. Okay, I'm going to read the entire paragraph back to you guys. Note that the PDS permits the presence of a JP2 binary wrapper so that external software may be utilized to take advantage of the full capabilities of the JPEG 2000 format to decompress only portions of an image. PDS software will have the capability to fully decompress the entire data file, but will not necessarily have the capability to decompress subsets of the code stream, such as individual resolution layers or tiles.
Sounds good to me.
Okay.
Let's go back.
Okay.
You talk about JP2 binary wrapper.
Yes.
I don't think that term has been used before. You've talked about boxes and super boxes, JP2 formatted files.
You tell me.
I don't think there's ever been mention of a binary wrapper.
Okay. Tell me what you want me to use.
I don't know what you mean.
The first paragraph deck
to header before, right?
Okay, I could use header, but the problem is it's not just the header. It's got other stuff that comes at the end of the file or in the middle of the file. I didn't know if header adequately described that. And the fact is there is a piece of that JP2 stuff that's called a header. We're talking about more than just the header.
Well, then previously change header to binary wrappers.
Where have I got previous references to JP2 header? Okay, however, the information necessary to take advantage of the additional capabilities of the format is only available with the inclusion of the JP2 binary wrapper. JP2 file.
I don't know if that is a true statement, but it would be consistent.
What do you guys want me to call this? I mean, I need to use a word to put in the paragraph.
Is it correct?
Binary wrapper?
Yes.
Yeah, it's about as accurate as anything else.
What do they call it in the ISO standard?
Yeah.
In a binary file.
Okay, I'm sorry. There's multiple conversations going on here. First, Steve?
I'm seeing some ambiguity here. Is it a binary wrapper for a file, or is it a wrapper of a binary file?
Neither. It is partly a binary header, and then there's other binary and ASCII information interspersed with the binary code stream.
Is there such a thing as an ASCII wrapper or a plain text wrapper?
No.
Why not just call it a wrapper? I don't know what they call it in the JPEG 2000 standard. Somebody started to say that. Whatever terminology they use it here and be consistent.
Well, they basically use encapsulation.
Well, that's a good term.
Well, what's encapsulation? What's that?
Excuse me. The J2C code stream, isn't it?
The header box headers encapsulate the data.
Excuse me.
Okay, go ahead, Todd.
No, it's Mitch this time.
Sorry. Oh, Mitch, sorry, go ahead.
We're actually fighting with paragraph 5 under I3, right, where it says...
Actually, we're back in fighting with paragraph... We're fighting with the wording that's going to be used at the end of paragraph 3 and at the beginning of paragraph 5.
Run up to paragraph 1.
I do not see header anywhere in that paragraph.
In that paragraph, I've got the phrase... but also a description of the binary JP2 file format that may be used to wrap the code stream.
Okay.
So if we're talking about a JP2 binary wrapper, right at the end of that, where it says a JP2 file format that may be used to wrap the code stream, can you just put in parentheses a JP2 binary wrapper, close parentheses? Now you've explained what you're talking about, or at least you've identified the phrase that you're going to use later.
That sounds like a good solution to me. How about you guys?
I mean, we're not trying
to
give
a complete tutorial. As long as it's consistent, understandable, the wording.
It's a trick
to reflect that.
Oh, okay, Mitch, did you suggest in parentheses a binary wrapper or a JP2 binary wrapper?
I'd put the phrase JP2 binary wrapper.
Okay.
Right at the end of the sentence.
Okay.
Is that what's shown in the diagram?
Hang on. No.
There's always a question.
I don't think the diagram states it. It doesn't have any text along those lines.
Well, then maybe we could add some text to the figure, and that gets us around the copyright problem.
Right.
Make the figure better than what they've got.
All right. Okay, so are we satisfied we're calling this thing a binary wrapper, JP2 binary wrapper? Everybody's happy with that?
Well, it depends on whether it is.
In the figure, it's called JP2 header.
There is a JP2 header box, which is a component of the JP2 file. However, there are also other boxes in there that are not header boxes.
Right.
And we're referring to all of the non-image data in that file.
Aren't there two forms? I guess I don't want to belabor this, but there's a J2C code stream, and then there's a JP2 file format, right?
That's correct.
And in that JP2 file format, there's things like headers and wrappers and other things that...
That statement is not entirely accurate. And the way we are using the word wrapper, we are using that to refer to the header plus the identifying boxes plus the intellectual property rights boxes plus the XML boxes plus the URL boxes. All of those together are what we are calling the wrapper.
Everything but the image.
You got it.
Say that. Write another sentence.
Okay, hang on. Well, okay, the problem is I don't get into describing all of this stuff until the fourth paragraph. Following this in no particular order, okay. All of these non... Okay, in this document, all of these non-image boxes will be collectively referred to as the binary wrapper.
Well, in that figure, don't they call it the signature box?
Nope, the signature box is an isolated piece of it.
It's just one piece of...
Just one piece.
Okay. Is it, okay.
Elizabeth, you're going to update that diagram so it's consistent with the words you're using here.
You got it, yep. Okay. Paragraph 4, now read. The JP2 file format essentially consists of a set of boxes that encapsulate both the J2C code stream as well as the metadata that describe it. The first two of these boxes must provide the information that identifies the file as a JP2 formatted file. The following super box is the JP2 header box, which contains information about the image size, resolution, color space, etc. Following this in no particular order are contiguous code stream boxes containing the compressed image data, and optionally, intellectual property rights boxes, XML boxes containing vendor-specific metadata, and UUID boxes containing reference URLs. In this document, all of these non-image boxes will be collectively referred to as the JP2 binary wrapper. Please see figure whatever for a diagram of this file format. Everybody satisfied?
Yeah.
Did I hear a no?
Oh, that was a yeah.
Okay, great. Moving on to paragraph 5, that was what we just did. Okay, PDS implementation rules, paragraph 2. Wording says the code stream must conform to part 1. This does not rule out conformance with other parts. We already addressed that issue by changing the wording to, furthermore, the syntax and features of the compressed code stream must conform to part 1, the core coding system. And I've already been directed to provide the full reference to the specification. Dick, does that satisfy your concerns there?
Yeah, we did that one.
Great. Labeling. This section should stand on its own. I considered doing that. I was a little reluctant to simply repeat multiple paragraphs that were already in the zip compression chapter. How do other people feel about the necessity for doing that? This would be all of the paragraphs that describe essentially the purpose and functionality of a combined detached label in the context of compressed data.
Could that be lifted out of the zip section and put in a preamble to the whole chapter?
Well, that was what I was trying to do with the policy document, and you guys told me to put that off. Now, granted, that is getting more into standards information, but it wouldn't apply to everything in an appendix on compression, since there would be plenty of files that don't use that method. I could put it in a preamble.
I think you could probably just do a better way of referencing the zip chapter.
Okay, if we want to presume the existence of such a preamble, I could make reference to it. Or do you prefer that I do, as Lyle suggested, find a better way of referring to the zip chapter? And part of the reason I was being a little bit ambiguous here is, pending resolution of the compression policy, the placement of the zip chapter may change. So you guys tell me how you want me to do it.
Assumptions that anything else being decided upon.
And then approval from the policy.
Does anybody have any objections to me quoting literally from another part of this text, of the standards reference? Anne, do you have any objections to that?
I'm sorry, I've been distracted by people coming into my office wanting my attention. I haven't heard anything yet that's caught my ear as being something that I'm worried about in any way.
All right.
Go ahead.
Okay, I'm just writing a note to myself. Independent. Okay. Great. 1, 3, 4, label example. We will need an example for the J2C case before we finish. Okay. The only difference that this label would have with the case, with the J2C case, would be the encoding type, which would be J2C. The file name extension would be different, and the description file would be different. Would you like to see that case as well?
I would.
Okay, so add label example for J2C. Okay, Dick, getting into your specific complaints about values. Okay, number one, all right. I received this label from the high-rise team.
Well, maybe they've got some problems.
They do, and I understand that.
Actually, the high-rise did take a picture of the moon.
Yes, but then Dick is correct. Actually, that doesn't mean they have to update the data set ID. No, that's actually correct. Susie's got a good point.
I think it's correct.
Yeah, it's correct as is. Count keywords require character values, so must be quoted because of the embedded punctuation. Count keywords do not require character values.
They did in the dictionary. I looked them up.
Okay, this is getting back onto the crossword issue.
They're character 30, I think.
Okay, then that's a problem with the data dictionary. You're talking about spacecraft clock start count?
Yeah, and stop.
Yeah, they are supposed to be characters.
They have to be characters. That doesn't mean that they have to be quoted, but because they have colons, they do.
Okay, fine. Let's quote it.
I tell you what, you'd be safer to put quotes around them because I think LVTool does not actually understand that.
Okay, it's done. Okay, encoding type. We never got this one resolved, did we? Encoding type keyword. Data dictionary, where are you?
Well, I think that comment has more to do with appearance than substance.
Okay, yeah, the encoding type keyword is general data type character. It should therefore be enclosed in quotes, which I believe is what I did.
Yeah, but there are other type keywords that aren't.
Okay, if that's an appearance issue rather than a standards issue, I'm not going to worry about it.
Okay.
Values for file name, uncompressed file name, description, and image need to be uppercase. I've seen them both ways. You know, I got no problem uppercasing them. Fine. I'll do it.
There's been a tendency in SCRs recently to show them lowercase, but as far as I can tell, the standard has always been upper.
Okay. I have no objection. I will change them.
Dick's point is not that values of keywords have to be uppercase, but that in particular file names still have to be uppercase.
Whatever.
Isn't that the same?
I'm uppercasing it.
Yep.
Well, the values of these keywords, but the values of other keywords don't necessarily have to be uppercase.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. And we'll take that argument offline right now. I've agreed to uppercase them, so that issue's dealt with. Dick, you are correct. The line sample should be 20,000, not 40,000.
80,000.
No.
No.
Oh, I'm sorry. Line samples is 20. Oh, okay.
Yes.
That'll do it.
Would be 40. And then you've got required storage bytes. Did I actually put a name in? Hang on.
Well, it's the same problem.
No, my calculation is correct if we change the line samples to 20,000.
Right.
Yep. Okay. Definition for encoding type version ID, syntax for constructing values, we've already dealt with that issue. Okay. I think that addressed all of your concerns, Dick. Anybody else have any final issues?
I have two.
Okay, go ahead, Todd.
The requested changes?
Requested changes? Yes, go ahead.
Don't we need to request that encoding type we add J2C and JP2?
Yeah.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
The standard.
Add two new standard values.
And
I will need to attach an updated element object definition for that.
Right, right. You know, as standard values, right?
Right.
Right.
So those would be J2C and JP2. Okay, good. Yes.
And for item, the existing item number 3?
Yes.
Whenever we add a new keyword, don't we have to have a proper SCR for it?
Not if it's part of another SCR. There are SCRs that have, like the cube one, for example. I believe we provided all the new keywords attached as part of that SCR to be voted on as a single block.
Yeah, we did the same thing with the spreadsheet.
Yeah.
Okay. Though we had kind of a protracted discussion of encoding type version, whatever, whatever the ending part of it's going to be.
We ended up with name.
Name. I would like to see at least an additional sentence there that sort of might be used as description information for that particular keyword.
Okay, what would you suggest?
Oh, I'd have to think on it.
The encoding type version ID element indicates the version of a standard or specification with which a particular encoding type complies. What else do we need?
Well, where did I see that?
Pardon me?
I texted what you just read. Is that somewhere in the document?
That's in the element object definition for encoding type version name.
Oh, it already exists?
It's the final page of the SCR.
Oh, I missed that. Sorry.
Is that adequate, Todd? Does that address your concerns?
Yeah.
Okay.
Fine.
Anybody else?
I just have a question about this telecon on Monday.
Yes?
What was it?
It was a working group, JPEG 2000 working group telecon.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. I guess not everybody was invited.
No, we only members, people that wanted to be part of the working group. Everybody was invited to be part of the working group. Once we had that group, we met on Monday.
Plus one troublemaker.
Plus one troublemaker. Okay, any other concerns? All right. Are you folks prepared to vote on this, given the changes that we've noted, or do you wish me to make the changes first, send it out, and then vote next week? Actually, we can't vote next week. We have to put it off for 2 weeks because of the Management Council meeting.
I need to see the changes before I make any decisions.
Likewise.
Would it be possible to do an email vote?
Sure.
Send out the changes and then... Since we've already discussed this, try for an email vote.
I would be happy to do that.
That's fine by me.
Let's do that.
Okay, can I, who specifically is the PPI person that I should be receiving a vote from?
Todd.
Todd, okay, and for imaging?
Mike.
Mike, is everybody else from imaging satisfied with that?
Yes.
Okay, are there any other nodes where I have dueling representatives? Potentially dueling representatives. Basically, I'm looking at Lyle, Dick, Ann, engineering node, I guess me or you. You and me? Doesn't matter. I'll let it be you, Steve, since I put the SCR together. Who am I missing? Small bodies, we've got rings, would be Mitch.
Yes, it would.
Geo would be Susie, I presume?
Yes.
Okay, so I've got Todd, Mike, Lyle, Dick, Ann, Steve, Mitch, Susie, and Nate would probably be Lee Elson these days. So you will be the people I will be specifically expecting a vote from, but I will send out the updated changes to everybody, so you guys can feel free to carry on whatever discussions you want.
What schedule do you want to do that on,
Melissa?
By the end of the
week. We've unfortunately got a all-hands meeting, don't we, after this? Yeah, definitely by the end of the week. Is there any chance we can get this on the Management Council agenda next week, or do we want to?
It is
already
on the
agenda.
Council agenda.
Okay,
And that means they're going to need to see it in advance of the MC.
You got it. I know. Let me say, okay, I will get this out come hell or high water by the end of the day today. That may be midnight, but it will be out today. Can you guys get votes back to me by the end of the day Friday?
Yes.
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 Yeah.
And can we then send the updated thing to the MC? Is that enough time, or is that really?
They're not going. They're just looking for an overview.
Well, you're assuming it passes. I've got another telecon that started 5 minutes ago, so I'm going to drop off.
Okay, Dick, we'll talk to you later.
Well, that's
Elizabeth, it's Mitch, and there's
yes.
Another issue. And I'm sorry Dick dropped off.
Yeah.
We've got to get something from the Management Council on compression policy.
I am pursuing that. Thank you. Yes, I know we need to do that.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know whether you've heard anything back from Rita.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Yeah, we've got some movement on that. Thank you.
Okay, and are we going to give them some sort of framework for the discussion? We don't want it open-ended. We would like for them to have from us, you know, a thing that says, here's what the problem is with the policy. This is what issues we think should be addressed in the policy.
Yes. I think the fundamental answer is yes. I need to talk with my boss to figure out the details on that. I know it's being worked already in terms, you know, folks on the management council are already discussing that. So
even better than that, it would be best to come up with a statement of how, give them the answer and let them agree or disagree. Don't just leave it open.
Or pick five or six key points and talk about advantages and disadvantages of each so that they have the information in front of them on what it is they're trying to vote on.
But let me ask you this. Do you believe presenting essentially the same PowerPoint presentation that I gave to you would educate them sufficiently to decide on this SDR? Was that useful?
I thought it was very useful. I don't know that that's... We've raised a bigger issue.
Yeah, it was useful for us, but I don't know if that's the level they need.
Yeah. I certainly would have that available to talk about JPEG 2000.
I think the compression policy is completely independent of the JPEG question.
Yeah, and has to come first. Yeah. Well, I mean, what we have said is that we have identified in the standards an inadequate policy on compression. And we started a whole process of setting the policy and then decided that we were in somebody else's rice bowl. But all the work that you laid out is important and useful. We don't want them to have to go back and retrace all of those steps from scratch.
That's right. Give them a foundation to start out.
Fundamentally, I agree with you folks, but based on the direction that I received from all of you last week, I essentially handed that issue off to the MC, and as I say, I have not yet had an opportunity to find out where that conversation has gone. So I can't respond right now to
okay.
your suggestions.
Well, handing off the issue, but did you give them the work we had done up to that point?
Yes.
I mean, that's kind of the suggestion.
That's Mitch's point, right?
Yeah.
Give them the pages that you had written.
Yeah.
Or even a subset of that.
Here's a place to start from.
And let's make it as easy for them as we can.
That's right.
Be able to say, here's our JPEG 2000 SDR. It depends on Management Council approving these two policies. And you say
okay.
what the policies are.
Let me just know. I will hand off all the information that we've already talked about to the Management Council.
Okay.
Okay. Any other concerns or issues?
Yeah, I guess when you say handing off to the Management Council, you mean Rita as the coordinator?
Again, I cannot respond to that yet. I have not had an opportunity to find out what the latest level of the conversation has been.
All right.
I'm confident that the proper communication is happening. I just need to be updated on what it is.
Okay.
All right.
Please give us a heads up when you do find out so that we can brief our bosses.
Sounds great. Okay, any other concerns or can we sign off? All right, then I will either see you guys next week or we will talk in 2 weeks, one way or the other. Okay, bye, folks.
Bye.